Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek, and I am 3 days from a vacation, and I am from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 14th, 2011, episode 227, sponsored today by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
So a while back, Jamie confessed on the air, and I think she was sorry she did it, that she actually likes SpongeBob SquarePants. You remember that
confession?
I'm not
sorry. I'm not sorry about that. I own that. I love SpongeBob.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I hope you own it, because there's a recent study that came out, and it answered a lot of questions for me. I've been working with you for almost a year, and I still have yet to figure you out. So, but this study just says it all. And it came out, and it's causing quite a stir. I don't know if you've seen it, but the study says that immediately after watching SpongeBob SquarePants, four-year-olds who took tests had serious problems. Basically, what they're saying, yes, they said SpongeBob SquarePants is detrimental to children's mental acuity. And they, they said you probably should interpret the results loosely. It was they actually studied 60 children. Immediately after these 9-minute segments, the kids took mental function tests. Those who had watched SpongeBob did measurably worse than the others. And what they're saying is that it basically caused a short-term attention problems.
Oh my God, Glenn, you're describing you.
I hate SpongeBob. So it's not me. This is you, girl. You have to own it. You said you owned it. So now you have to own it, because obviously you have problems after you watch that. And then you come on, you watch that in the morning, you come on and do the show.
You know what? I would love to say that I got up early enough to watch TV before the show, but honey, it's 6:04, and I am definitely not awake before this. Now, what happened
Listen to this. Studies that parents should realize that young children are compromised in their ability to learn and use self-control immediately after watching SpongeBob.
They lose control after SpongeBob?
I think the theory is, and they did control, they used other cartoons too. I think the theory is, and I've never watched SpongeBob, so you'll have to help me out here, Jamie, SpongeBob queen, is that apparently SpongeBob is kind of a chaotic show. The cartoon is kind of fast and sort of chaotic and just out there. And they're thinking that that's what causes these temporary fits of insanity after watching it.
So SpongeBob, I would not say that it's a chaotic, out-of-control show, but it definitely has it has some adult themes in it, I think, and that's why I enjoy it. But I must say, Glenn, the real secret to watching SpongeBob SquarePants is the fact that I actually fall asleep during SpongeBob. It is like, I don't know, it's like taking a Benadryl to me. I watch the show and it puts me to bed. So that is exactly why I watch it, because in the middle of the day when I want to take a nap, I just pop on some SpongeBob, and I really think it has something to do with the colors and the movement on the screen. Just completely
you know, you could
flag,
get yourself a little mobile and hang it above the bed. Same effect.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a great idea.
So I love this one, too. And another test measuring self-control and impulsiveness. Kids were rated on how long they could wait before eating snacks presented when the researchers left the room. SpongeBob kids waited 2.5 minutes on average versus at least 4 minutes for the other two groups. So do you find yourself hungry after you watch SpongeBob?
You know, it's all about instant gratification, Glenn. Why wait? You know, I mean, SpongeBob, if he teaches us nothing, he teaches us to go for your dreams. And if your dreams tell you that you're hungry... Dude,
Jennifer.
He lives in a pineapple under the sea, and he works at, like, the equivalent of an underwater McDonald's, okay? So,
you know how you give me the whip when my ADD kicks in? You know how you give me the whip sound effect? Well,
mm-hmm.
Now when you become impulsive and you lose all control and you lose self-control, all I have to do is say SpongeBob. That's all I have to do.
I think you need to have the sounder, the SpongeBob SquarePants music, and it'll be just perfect.
Yeah, there we go. Jennifer, what's up today's show?
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, we have a blended show. And not the cuisine art type of blended, but the blending of all things about your life relate back to a horse. We start out by blending a list or two into the morning conversation. We've got some really good ones for this Wednesday. And then we will move over and blend some operant training techniques into traditional horse training with our thinking outside the box target on target training guru, Shauna Koresh. And after a short musically blended interlude, the horse.com's horse health report will be here to try Glenn's horse husband point of view with a dicey medical topic, likely to be as successful as oil and vinegar.
Oh, I just noticed what the topic was.
Oh, get ready.
I got to see. I got to see this. This is going to be good. We got it on our show notes here that we have in front of us.
I'll be checking out today early. I have a doctor's appointment at 10:05. So I'll be leaving at 10 o'clock. And, Jamie, you're just going to have to handle flesh-eating bacteria?
You know what? You know what something like this does? MRSA, which there was a recent story about a Dutch girl that caught MRSA from a Frisian foal. So we're going to talk to them about that. However, you know what this does to Glenn is it grosses Glenn out, and what it does to me is it makes me paranoid. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, my horse totally has flesh-eating bacteria on him. So, this really isn't going to work well for anybody. The sheet cleaning, I don't care. This one, whatever. We both might have to leave. We'll let Jennifer do this, too. Why not?
Yeah, there we go. It'll be the Jennifer show today. We'll just let Jennifer handle the whole thing. My Daily Winnie goes out to a caller we had a few days ago, a friend of ours who recently moved to Texas by the name of Chrissy Joy. She's an actress and a model. And she called in to say hi, and she was in, remember, Jamie, she was in this contest to be the official spokesmodel for the Texas Motor Speedway.
She's from New Jersey, and she and I were working on her Texas accent. She needs to develop it.
That's correct. Well, she apparently did okay, because she made the final. So she's now a finalist.
Ooh,
they're going to do interviews, and then I think there's another round of voting or something. But she was all excited because she is in the finals. And for a broke, starving actress, I think the prize for this was $3,000 or $4,000. And for a broke, starving actress, that's a big deal. So wish her the best of luck. Good luck, Chrissy Joy.
Yeah.
Well, I have two Daily Winnies. This first one is for Awesome Again. He is the leading sire of Breeders' Cup winners, and he is actually at Rootin' Riddle right now because he had to undergo colic surgery yesterday. He is the sire of Ghost Zapper. He's got 11 Grade 1 stakes winners, so he's a fantastic sire. And so we wish him well. Awesome Again. Awesome Again. Yeah.
I never heard of him.
Well, that's because you don't study you don't study bloodlines.
He wasn't a big Kentucky Derby winner, so I didn't know him.
He's actually more known for being a phenomenal sire. Have you heard of his son, Ghost Zapper? No, probably not.
No.
You don't follow the Breeders' Cup like you follow the Derby. See, these are all Breeders' Cup winners, which is supposed to be even, you know, bigger deal than the Derby.
The guy we had on yesterday, your friend here from Kentucky, how did his horses do you know?
I don't know. I'm going to get the recap after the sale. But what I read yesterday is that all the numbers were up, even on day three. Remember how you said that, you know, the $1.4 million horses, those people aren't going through a recession. They never will. They have money. But it's the bread and butter horses, like the day three and day four. Well, day three was reportedly awesome at the Kingsland sale. So
that's great.
We'll have to see. Yeah, so, I mean, if that's up, then it looks like everything is up, and then he would have done pretty well. But we'll get the recap after the sale on how he did.
All right, terrific. And that
was
your last daily win. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, so I have been doing a broadcast from my home for about 8 years. Off and on for 8 years, I've been doing a radio broadcast from my home. I used to report traffic in Atlanta from my house all the way up through doing a DJ show from my house. Anyway, technology is amazing. So forever, I've had a little pillow down next to me, and Brett, my little border collie, Sheltie Mix, who is my little shadow, she's 9 years old, and she has been laying on that pillow for the entirety of my radio career broadcasting from home. Same pillow. It's disgusting, but it's her bed, and she's been laying on it for many, many years while I do a radio broadcast. I would like to point out that my dog is currently 25 feet away outside the door of this room because she refuses to come in. Why? The cat.
It's like cat in the room and she won't come in, huh?
This cat that we got, you know, my outside kitty, is now living in my studio. And the dog, 8 years of sitting with me during radio broadcasts. I mean, every single show we've done, Glenn, she has been sitting next to me. And 8 years, and now she will not come near me because there is a cat in the room, and it's completely unacceptable.
There's a dog sitting away. Isn't the dog supposed to be chasing the cat out of the room? Can we have this backwards?
The cat will definitely let you know that you are not welcome in this room to the dogs. Considering I woke up at 3 o'clock last night or night before last to the sound of Boomer shrieking and running away from the cat. Apparently,
Boomer lost.
He lost. The cat won. So the dynamics in my house, animal-wise, have completely changed, and it's only taken about a week.
It's funny how the cats, you know, the cats do teach the dogs. Eventually, you know, the dogs think they're all high and mighty. But, you know, once those claws go into the nose, it changes things.
It really does. I guess I haven't had a cat. I haven't had a cat since I was a kid. So I'm learning, and I'm just impressed at how so the Daily Winnie goes to Frank the cat. I'm just so impressed at how he just handles things. He just runs the place.
How are you handling the cat? You're allergic to cats. Now, you've been getting your shots. Have the shots worked for allergies?
The shots really won't take effect until they're done, my allergy shots. However, I do take a pill every morning, a decongestant, so I'm fine. It's no problem right now. However, if I didn't take my little no-snot pill, I would not be able to function with the cat in the room, I would imagine.
Yeah, I know when you were here with our cat, who's a long-haired cat, you were having trouble the 4 days you stayed with us. It was pretty bad. So that's why I was surprised you got a cat and then let it into the house. Why is the cat in the house, by the way?
It's too hot outside. It's like 100 and something degrees. I can't leave a cat outside. He was panting outside. So, but Glenn, you know, I really, it wasn't that bad staying at your house. If you enjoy breathing, then, you know, it would be a problem. But your long-haired cat, who, by the way, completely knew that I wanted nothing to do with him, which is why he kept trying to jump on my bed. He wiping his butt on my pillows. I mean, he totally knew. I wanted nothing to do.
That's true. Well, I have some fun. You know how Wednesdays is always, I come up with a list for Wednesdays. Well, I have my list today, and I got to get you and Jennifer involved in this. I'm going to have you guess. And I know, Jamie, you love top 10 lists. So this is I found this, who wrote this? A lady by the name of Nanette Levin wrote this for a blog sometime last year, and I found it interesting, and I thought, you know, this list is pretty good. I was ready to hate the list, but then I liked it. So it's the top 10 list of the dumb things people do to save money with horses. So these are the dumbest things that people do to save money with horses, and I want you to guess what might be on this list. Do you guys have any idea of what the top 10 things, the dumb things people do to save money with horses? Some are obvious, some are not.
I've got a couple. I would not be afraid to use baling twine as some sort of halter or lead rope. If I need to throw it around a horse or tying up anything around the barn, baling twine is my go-to rope.
See, that is not on the list. You know, and actually, I wouldn't consider that dumb. That's just economical.
Oh, okay. My
that,
other one.
That and which, duct tape, that's just economical. That's just practical. Right, Jennifer?
That's what I was going to say. Using the duct tape and you wrap it around your stirrups and it becomes a really affordable stirrup tread instead of buying those plastic inserts.
No.
Really?
Vet wrap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's good.
Even
see,
better.
Vet wrap works. Duct tape
here.
Slick. That's pretty good. Or yeah.
So, all right. So, what are the other guesses?
I'm going to go with not getting your horse's feet trimmed. I'm not going to go with shoeing because most people with shoes use shoes. But I know a lot of people who have turnout pasture pets, they get their feet done like once a year.
Okay. Number 10 on the list is neglecting trimming, shoeing, or hoof care to save a few bucks. And their advice was shop around if the blacksmith is too expensive or unskilled in keeping your horse's feet balanced and instructing you on how to keep them healthy. And, Jennifer, you just started a new series of tips on Horse Tip Daily with a farrier, that guy we had on that was so much fun here on the show, right?
Yes, Steve Davis from Franklin, Tennessee, started doing tips with us all about hoof care, farriery, and
hoof care, people. Hoof, I can't take it anymore. Go ahead.
Hoof.
Sorry.
Hoof.
What did he say?
He agreed that that's a dumb thing to do.
Okay. No, well, how does he say hoof?
You know, I don't recall.
All right, dumb thing people would do, now that I'm understanding where we're going, it's not cost-effective, it's dumb stuff, is people try to treat their own horses when clearly a veterinarian is needed.
Yeah.
You know, that should be on the list. It really is. We'll give you this. It's number two. Number two was skipping vaccinations, which sort of along the same line is a really dumb. That's sort of not the same thing, but it is a really dumb thing to do. Skipping vaccinations was number two on the list. And, you know, with all the stuff, we talked about this yesterday with, what, the Venezuelan, the latest equine encephalomyelitis out there, that you really should be getting your vaccinations done. But you're right, trying to do it yourself with veterinary care is not always the best
move. I have one.
Yep.
I have one. Only go to the barn when you have time to ride. You don't want to waste money on gas. So you see your horse once a week.
Well, yeah, you know what? That's number four, assuming a horse is happiest left alone. So basically that's what they're saying. They're saying you got to go visit your horse. If you can, you know, if you can get out a little more often, even if you don't have time to ride, get out there and visit your horse.
That was always a bugaboo of mine when we had a boarding stable. The people don't come out to even look at the horse, assuming it's just fine. And that's just not really ideal. Cause
Jamie, we had a couple that had two horses with us that did not come out for a year.
What?
So, a year. So my question always was, why are you paying full care board on two horses if you're only coming out once a year? What is the point?
I find it shocking. Although people that own boarding stables say that the best boarders are the boarders that never show up.
Well, that is true.
Less
they
drama,
were the best boarders
less
we
people.
Had. That is
exactly.
True. All right, let me, any more? You want me to just go down through the list here?
You go ahead.
All right. So number 10 was neglecting or trimming horse and hoof care. Number 9 was cheap board, and basically she says you get what you pay for. If the offer seems too good to be true, it probably is. Consider the care, nutrition, support, and handling of your horse will be getting as you entrust his safety to another. So, you know, that also could go the other way, and the most expensive board is not always the best care either. So it's a matter of looking at care and talking to the other boarders. That's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, buying a horse without – you're going to love this one, Jamie. Buying a horse without input from an experienced trainer or instructor.
Amen. People. And I would say probably on that same list, or maybe this is another one, is not getting a vet check on a new horse. But he's only $500. Well, yeah, and then you get him home, and that $500 just turned into $2,000 worth of, extra stuff that he's going to need, and then, you know, whatever. But, yeah, please have a trainer go with you if you're inexperienced. Please. Go ahead.
Number 7 was shopping for price on starting under saddle services. And I had to, and what she's talking about is trainers. Basically getting a cheap trainer in instead of finding one that you really mesh with. So what she's saying there is find a trainer, regardless of the cost, that you're going to mesh with and is going to do best for you and your horse. So that's what she was talking about there.
Okay.
Number 6, and this relates to our advertiser today. We could probably do the ad right now. Feeding crap. It might seem like you're saving money buying grain from a cow mill or throwing hay into a horse that's dusty, molded, or devoid of nutritional value, but the fact is, you ain't. You're going to have long-term problems there by feeding crap. And, make sure the hay's quality. We got a batch of hay in right now at our barn. We have to watch every flake because there was some mold in it. It must have been, probably rained or something. So there's some mold in it. We have to watch that every flake we have to watch. It is true that there are cow mills and things like that that make their own grain, and you're not guaranteed what's going to be in the bag necessarily, like you would if you were buying a Purina or something like that. So I think that's what she's saying there. Although in the past we had a very reputable mill that we bought from. So,
well, I got to ask you then, if the hay at your boarding stable, it has mold in it, can you not return it?
I don't know if she's trying to return it. See, we don't buy it. So I don't know if she's trying to return it or what the story is. We used to return ours. They used to give us credit if we had a bunch. If you had one or two, that's just a given. If you got a huge load of hay in and you have a couple bales that are bad, you count on that. But if you've got, if you've got 30, 40, 50 bales that are bad, then they'll usually do something about it.
See, and Glenn, I would say that this is where your boarding stable may need to work on things a little bit, because if they bought their hay, like you were just saying, from a reputable person, that person would take the hay back. No questions asked.
Right.
And this
that's correct.
Where you're saying,
however,
if
you're buying it from an auction, which is very popular over here, you're just going to a hay auction to buy a big truckload of hay, then you have no recourse. You better be checking that hay out. Before you buy it.
Oh, yeah, that's scary.
You're just
going to,
what you always risk is they put the good bales on the outside. you know, and on the inside, you don't know what those inside bales, you can't get to them. You know, they're stacked up on the truck, so you can't get to them. So you're always risking that when you buy at an auction. Jennifer, we bought a lot at auctions over the years, and we never really had too much trouble with it because those, if it's a dealer that goes back to the auction all the time, they want to make sure they don't get a bad reputation.
Well, that's the trick. When you see a new truck showing up that you've not seen at the sale before, let somebody else buy the first three or four loads that they bring out because, you know, generally speaking, there's 100 lots at the sale, and 75 of them are the guys that are there every week because it's a great way to go get your hay if you can only have a couple of weeks' worth of hay at a time. And, yeah, when they're new guys, you wait and let somebody else test the waters.
There's one that relates to this, too. Number five, spending money on supplements without assessing your horse's needs. And that's where FeedXL comes in. I'll get my plug in for FeedXL. It's FeedXL Day anyway. So, you know, what this says is instead of buying buckets and buckets of supplements without understanding what your horse needs, you know, invest some time and some energy into figuring out exactly what your horse needs, and that's what FeedXL does. I mean, this whole number five could have been written as a commercial for FeedXL. So, you know, by going to FeedXL, plugging in all the information about your horse, and it's going to tell you exactly what you need for supplements and hay and grain and all of that stuff and the quantities that you need, so you can end up saving money that way. So what this one's saying is it's actually a waste of money to go throwing tons of supplements into your horse that your horse doesn't need. So that's something that just by going to FeedXL.com, you can figure out if you're doing the right thing financially, too.
Right. Can I ask on, we've never really gone over it, and we've been doing this FeedXL commercials for a while. How much is it to do FeedXL?
Is it an ongoing thing?
Is it do you actually purchase a subscription?
It's a subscription, and it's like you can get a certain number of horses. Depends on how many horses, how big your barn is. But it's not that much. It was like, I don't remember it being around $20. But then you could do it for 1 month and quit, too. You're not obligated to do it for a long period of time and then go back in 6 months and do it again. It wasn't real expensive. Considering what you pay on feed and what you can save, it's cheap.
Okay.
So number four was assuming a horse is happy, it's left alone. We already did that one. Number three, failing to check a horse daily for injuries and issues. And this also goes back to the one about not going out to visit your horse. You can't assume when you're boarding your horse especially, and especially if he's on turnout board, that the owner is even looking at your horse, or that the farm manager is even looking at your horse.
Yeah,
right.
That
so you have to make sure that your horse doesn't have that tiny cut that turns into the major infection that causes a huge vet bill.
It could be flesh-eating bacteria.
Exactly.
Now, I can hear it now. During the song today, Jamie's going to be typing this little note. Running out to the barn, checking for flesh-eating bacteria. that's another thing you got to check. And obviously, puffy legs. Jennifer goes out almost every day with Beaker. And thank God she did last week because she found that, you know, that his legs puffed up within an hour of her just grooming the horse and, you know, had that reaction to whatever he ate. He seems to be better now, and she rode him last night, so everything's good there. Number two, we're skipping vaccinations. And the number one, you're going to like this one too, Jamie. The number one bad, dumb thing you could do by trying to save money on horses is jumping with glee over a free horse.
Oh, God. Yeah. There are no free horses. Repeat after me. There are no free horses.
There are no free
horses.
It takes as much money to feed, house, and care for a good horse, actually, than an unsuitable one. So, you know, the one thing we always said is, you know, the cheapest part of buying a horse is buying the horse. So, you know, a free horse usually is coming with issues, mental, physical, or both. And it's going to cost you a lot of money at some point here. So, that's the one thing to keep in mind, jumping with glee over a free horse.
Yeah, have that money tucked away. Hopefully you've got some savings in an account that you haven't touched in years.
This list was off of horsesenseandsense.com. And actually, it's kind of a neat little blog. I enjoyed the blog, actually. So it's horsesenseandsense.com. And that's my top 10 pick or list of the week.
All right. So I guess we'll get our guest on here in a minute. But you want to go ahead and, since we're going to do it anyway, did you already do your FeedXL commercial? Do you want to go ahead and do the actual sponsor of today's show, Back on Track?
Yes. Yes, so let's talk about Back on Track. Here's a little recording from BZ Madden about Back on Track.
BZ Madden was a member of the 2004 Athens Gold Medal Olympic team, a double silver medalist from the World Equestrian Games from Aachen, Germany in 2006, and a two-time winner of the American Invitational. BZ is one of the top-ranked riders in the world.
I've been using the Back on Track product for 4 years now, and I use them on my horses and myself, so I can tell you firsthand that they actually work. I've used the back pad or the back brace on myself when my back is sore, and it really helps keep it from getting fatigued, and really helps, even once it's sore, it can really help it feel better and get it back to normal again. So I know firsthand that it does, they do work. And on the horses, we start out with the bandages, using it on horses that have maybe minor chronic inflammation in their legs, and it seems to really tighten up their legs. And we went on to use the pads for the back, and I think it really helps loosen up the horse's back. And again, probably the same thing it does for my back. It keeps it from getting too fatigued, and therefore it doesn't get a sore.
All right, that's BZ Madden, and if you want to learn more about the products of Back on Track, you can just go to backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com, and we appreciate them being the sponsor of today's show. Well, Jamie, did you see, you have a headline here while we're waiting for our guest that I just have to hear about, and the headline is Topless Eventers Help Raise Money for RDA. So anytime I see topless eventers, I have to know more. Are you there, Jamie?
I'm right here. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. So if you recall, I posted the photo of the guy, you know, I posted the picture of the scantily clad eventer in Jog Up for you, and then I posted the photo of the shirtless guy that was had just gotten off his horse. So I was.
You know how many comments we had on the shirtless guy? We had dozens of comments on the shirtless guy.
Oh yeah, it was very popular, for sure. Hey, thank you. Chaz, bring me coffee. Okay, so we had that photo, and it was very popular, and I had no idea where that came from. Well, finally, the news of, you know, over in Europe finally caught up with me, and I found this on Horse and Hound. It's an article, Topless Eventers Help Raise Money for RDA at Blenheim. What they did was a couple event riders, several of them, they held basically a poussance, which is a high-jumping competition. And they got to jump the fence, and then after they jumped the fence, if they knocked it down or whatever, they could have another chance to jump the fence again if they took their shirts off. So I would like to say that it was a fantastic idea. I appreciate the fundraising for the Riding for the Handicap, and I think it was a great way to go ahead and do it. Now, I would like to let you know that there's some event riders that are over in Europe, J.P. Sheffield, Austin Connor. They donated money, and they both took off their shirts, and they cleared 1.85 meters. J.P. Sheffield, an event rider, went on to clear 1.9 meters, bareback, shirtless, bareback.
She was shirtless,
you know,
too?
This is a guy.
Oh.
this is a guy, J.P. Sheffield, I think it's a guy in the photo, was shirtless, bareback, and cleared 1.9 meters. Do you know how much that is in feet?
No, I don't, actually.
That is over 6 feet. That's 6.2 feet.
Bareback.
Bareback. Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome.
And then the high jump event also featured Laura Collette, who cleared 1.8 meters, which is 6 feet, without a saddle. And she joked around and said she jumped better without it. She, however, did not go shirtless.
I was going to say, where are the pictures of the girls shirtless? How come I didn't get any of those?
They did not go shirtless. It was just guys. No women took advantage of taking their shirt off to jump it again. But anyway, it was a fantastic event, and I highly recommend it to any sport that, you know what? You know what needs shirtless? Polo. Yeah. You know how popular polo would be if they would go without shirts?
I would agree with you. And our next
forget
a vetting.
Hold up. I mean, talk about some Argentinian polo players running around without shirts on. Oh, my God. How much do you want for a ticket?
Yeah, there's a good fundraiser for you. All right. Let's talk about training horses here, and we have our next guest. I think Jennifer's going to lead the way on this one. And Shauna's probably so happy that she came into the conversation when we were talking about topless riders. Good morning, Shauna.
Well, good morning. And what a way to wake up.
That's what we do every morning, Shauna. That's what we do every morning. All right, Jennifer, take it away. And do you want to introduce Shauna?
Shauna Koresh, my very favorite on-target training, thinking outside the box guru, is the lady that kind of got the operant training craze started for horse folks in America. And we have her on every month to chit-chat about how to blend what we might call traditional horse training techniques, where you really focus on controlling the horse physically, in other words, you control his physical parts, with operant training, which controls the horse's brain, and then he gets to control his parts separately. That's kind of how it works. So today it looks like we are talking about blending those two things together, Shauna, so get us rolling here.
Okay. Well, good morning. It's nice to be here. One of the things, because basically with the operant conditioning, when I was at SeaWorld and what I saw when I started looking into horses, I realized horses are trained very different than we train the marine mammals, because everything we did with the marine mammals is based in positive reinforcement. So I remember thinking, why do horses listen at all? Well, how do you get, you know, I didn't even understand. So I've soaked up, you know, the horse world and how it's done. And you know, they're really effective training tools. We've done great things with horses. But I focus on introducing people to the positive reinforcement side. This is historically hasn't been done with horses. This has not historically been part of the equation. So I introduce that side to people. Now, people oftentimes, though, they get the impression that I only use positive reinforcement, that I am totally against, you know, what is traditionally being done with horses. And that is really not the case. I don't find that it is the best way to integrate horses, especially horses that have already been trained through the removal reinforcement, I like to call it, traditional training. A lot of times that's what they respond to. So it's the big plan that, you know, we kind of worked out. And I really did this with John and BZ Madden. And BZ is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist in show jumping. And that I had the opportunity when he first heard about it, her husband, he said, come to our farm and let's figure out how to use this positive reinforcement, because he saw the implications. He listened, he took it home, he did it with one of her horses. He's like, this is crazy good. So then it was kind of like my lab time there, where you figured out, well, how much of traditional training and how much of positive reinforcement. And it's a big, you know, it's a little bit for different horses. So, like, if I have a horse who comes into me and he has, you know, he wears a bit that weighs 4 pounds.
Oh, yeah, you know, and that happens. Sure.
It does. It does. And if that's what they're used to responding to, that's where I need to start to set them up for success, so I have something that I can reinforce with positive reinforcement. As the training goes on, you can simplify and get down to a lesser bit, use less of the, you know, of the removal reinforcement, and they'll respond. It's been proven that they respond way higher, way better, higher criteria, higher motivation with the positive reinforcement. So the trick is, how do you take this positive reinforcement-based training, which I'm going to tell you, I use a primary reinforcement, which is food, because it's so strong in their physical makeup. You know, that's innately they look for food because they need it to survive. But how do you turn that into being, you know, a productive tool, not a detrimental tool. So that's what I do. And I blend the two together, and I find that is the very best way to go. So even people who, you know, like people come to me and go, oh, I use Pat Pirelli system, I use Monty Roberts, or I do this or I do that. It's like you can do all the things you traditionally do or typically do, and you can add in the positive reinforcement, and you're just going to step up the equation because you actually have a way to put something in it that the horse truly wants and desires, which changes the whole relationship for the better. The dynamics just shift to something that you can't even put words to describe. It's awesome.
It's more of a, it's another tool in your toolbox.
Exactly.
Could we say if you have the skill set to lunge a horse, you know how to do that with a horse that has already been reasonably well trained, you can add to your toolbox a skill set to also long line a horse. Those are complementary skill sets. You can take positive reinforcement training and add that to excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit today, and you can add that to other what we might call positive reinforcement techniques that you use. For example, when we ride, most of us are really good at, oh, finally we got the left lead, give him a pat on the neck, tell him he's a wonderful guy, give him a walk and a long rein. That we would consider a positive reinforcement kind of technique from the traditional point of view. Could you give me an example of if I'm using positive reinforcement operant training techniques, and your horse has already started down that road and that he understands what that the clicker sound or the reward sound is, how can we add horse finally got left lead canter, give him a pat in the neck? In what way does the operant training, the click sound, build on that? Does that make any sense? I'm not having a hard time articulating the question.
I think I do. You're saying how are they different? How do they work together? How does it blend? Why would we do this?
Right.
Well, and one of the things is something that really to consider when your horse, you're working on a canter depart and you pat him on the, you stop the work and you pat him on the neck. The real reinforcement there isn't the pat on the neck. They may associate that with, but the real reinforcement is the stopping of the work. So they may associate the patting on the neck with the reduction of work. You're removing the aids, things are softening, you're going, okay, you have a break. That is removal reinforcement because you're removing the work in the adversive. So that's really what is reinforcing. The pat on the neck is kind of a little bit of an incidental, not something they're going around going, please pat me on the neck, I'll jump, 6 feet
right.
for a pat on the neck, so that's not their biggest motivation. So as you're going along and your horse picks up, the correct lead or he has a better transition and you click, which has been, we also associate that, it's classic conditioning that starts that, and that's kind of a whole different ball of wax, really simple process, it's, short, quick, easy. But as they learn to know that the click means, yes, what you just did is correct, and you've earned the possibility of getting a reward. So as a reward that you value, not just something that, I am making you do and then letting you have a break from, but something that they go around seeking all day long. I mean, they are grazers and eaters, so all day they're looking for food. So by giving them something that they value, they will remember exactly what earned them the click that said, you just earned a reinforcement. So when you have that equation, instead of a horse who might be fearful, let's say flying lead changes, that can get horses kind of wound up or kind of, they're relaxed and they're paying attention and they're focusing. So it changes it all. But putting something in it gives him a motivation to be a part of the training process. And I do like to say, slow down, you'll go faster, because in the very beginning, you're kind of breaking it down and teaching them a new way of thinking to go along with their traditional training. Mm-hmm. But once they're involved in the training equation, I mean, really psychologically involved and wanting to do this, they're just like sponges. They just want to learn. So as you took something, so that's where you do it, like in the canter depart, but, something like long line, like he knows the lunging, and you might kind of, even though he knows it and he's good at it, you might reinforce it a couple times and then shift to the long lining. And as sometimes horses, when they're introduced to new things, sometimes their first reaction is, I don't know what this is, I'm not sure I like it, or I don't know what this, you know, and sometimes they get scooty and excited, or sometimes they just shut down and go, I'm not doing anything then.
Yeah, exactly. So, they wall it all off and say, I'm just not even here. La, 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 la. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
Beaker can do that la, la, la thing really well. Now, a question I get a lot chit-chatting with people is, and there's going to be a wide variety here, give me a range for you, somebody who really understands operant conditioning and understands how it applies to equines, what kind of a timeline would you have? You have a children's hunter who's been doing really well at the 3-foot divisions, but he's decided that he doesn't like to hang out at the gate anymore. He stands there and paws continuously, and it's getting to be a problem. So Shauna Koresh swoops in to cure the problem. What kind of a timeline would you typically have, and give me kind of a range, from you've just met this horse to the horse actually working on the specific issue he has? Because obviously you have to start from square one so he learns what that bridging item is. This is a little clicker sound. What kind of a timeline would you have on average between X weeks and X weeks?
It would usually, that would probably be, I mean, it, see, being
not
if
the
you
problem
could,
is solved, but when you can start working on the actual problem, because
oh,
you have to
okay,
have a little learning curve before you start working on the actual problem.
I get what you're saying. When can you get right to the problem?
Right.
Well, I suggest, because this is, it is the repetition that kind of gets them engaged in this and them starting to think. So, and it's short. I like to do really short sessions at first. So I tell people to take about a week, you know, a week to do the initial part. Now, that's only 5 minutes twice a day. So I go in with the initial part, and I go in, like, let's say you get to the barn. I go in for 5 minutes. I kind of condition the clicker, teach them to turn their head away and respect my space. That's the first lesson. And so I do it for about 5 minutes when I first get there. Do your normal thing, you know, get your horse ready, you know, ride, do whatever you're going to do. And then I would suggest doing it for about 5 minutes right before you go home. And so you have two sessions in there. And so it's really about 10 minutes a day. But the repetition, I do like 4 days of the clicker training to make it really strong and to really get them solid about minding their manners and keeping your space, you know, your healthy boundaries. And then I do about 5 minutes of the target training where I teach them to touch their nose to a target. So they have one is the clicker, which is form of communication. The second is the target, which actually helps to teach them to learn through the positive reinforcement. So you're teaching them to engage and to solve the puzzle. It's very simple. There's a lot of behaviors I will use the target for, because as they learn to touch their nose for it, you can use it for trailer loading, lowering their head for clipping, backing up properly under saddle, whatever it might be. But even if I'm not going to use it, I go through the process because it helps them to learn how to learn through this process.
That's kind of like a week. Yeah, that's kind of like in traditional European method of starting a young horse, everybody got taught to ground drive and frequently even got to drive between the shafts, not because they were going to be becoming a driving horse, but because
right.
those skills could be applied to riding later. So that skill of figuring out how the heck do I manage to get this lady to click and then maybe give me a cookie, he starts to look around for new things to do that wouldn't have occurred to him before. So you're teaching him to think through puzzles. So would it be 2 weeks, 22 sessions, until you got to the point where you could take the 3-foot junior hunter and go, okay, we're going to apply these skill sets to pawing at the in gate.
Right.
Wouldn't that depend on the horse, too?
Well, that's why we're taking out the variable of the trainer. We're going to use Shauna because she's really good at it.
No,
if
but
I
meant the horse,
this,
how quickly the horse
years.
Learns and how motivated the horse is, too.
And that is what this – I usually take just a week. And I can
really?
I can go to a clinic and I can rifle through things a little bit faster, you know, but I don't recommend it because the more time you spend during this week – and, again, it's just 10 minutes a day because I do the same amount of time for the target training – as the clicker training at the end of a week. So you basically have, you know, 10 minutes, you have maybe just over an hour, under an hour and a half put into it. But that repetition and that time, during that time, what you're also building, which is really, really important, you're increasing your value to the horse. So your opinion becomes way more important than it used to be because he's really interested in what you have and what you're doing and why you're doing it, and he really starts to trust you. And by this point, your horse is following you around. They're nickering when you're coming up to the stall. They're excited to do it. So it's kind of during that time you're really building your own value. So now when you go out into the real world and you go, okay, now let's get to, you know, you're stopping at the fence or you're rearing or you're pawing at the ingate or whatever, you know, the issue is, it's there by that point going, okay, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I'm really interested in what you're doing. But it only takes a week, and they are really engaged and interested. And part of the beauty of the really quick sessions, because I find that I can get more progress in two quick sessions than one long session. So the beauty of the quick sessions is they're doing it, they're doing great. You know, you leave on a positive note, you go, good job, you know, here's that, and you walk away, and they're like, wait, I still want you to come back. So by the end of the week, you leave while they still want more. You know, right. So they are constantly going, are you coming to me? Are you coming to me? Where are you going? What are you doing? And it kind of psychologically, you get into the head, you build, you know, you kind of limit how much time they have with you, which becomes more and more of a privilege to them, and that is a huge thing. When they look at the time with you as a privilege, and sour horses, that were fancy campaigned horses that came and were stopping and blah blah blah, and they were just sour, you know, and they would come and pretty soon when you're pulling out the saddle, they're nickering, hoping they get to go work, you know, and that's just, you know, it just changes it for them. So after a week, I'm ready to get into wherever or whatever the issue is.
That's interesting. You know, I was thinking the whole time you were talking here that, you know, you made money doing the operant conditioning for horses. I need to do a book on operant conditioning for horse husbands. And this will not be teaching the horse husbands. This will be teaching the wives how to successfully operant condition their horse husbands. And pretty much it involves two things, food and sex. I mean, that's simple. It'll be a short book. It'll be about two pages. The first page will be on food. The second page will be on sex. There'll be three pages. And then the third page will be when to use food and when to use sex, because there's probably conditions for both. So we'll have to determine more effective.
And there'll be some secondary reinforcers in there. But, yeah, and the funny thing is, actually, the all this behavior training is not animal behavior. It's behavioral psychology that applies to all of us. So it is actually, in effect, it's just, there's more factors in humans. So it makes it a little harder to control that. So first we're going to put the husbands in a box. They're going to live in a stall, and we're going to bring them out.
You know, I read an excellent article the other day on, now we're off topic totally, but who cares? I read an excellent article the other day on Horse Junkies United. They're getting some great articles on that blog. And it was written by a woman that's been on our show, and I'm trying to get her and her husband to come on. It was about her horse husband. And one of the things she said in the article I thought was incredible, talk about conditioning, this is where it came in, is she said, you know, you're always getting your horse husband to come out to the barn to help you with things that are dirty, nasty, heavy, that are just a pain in the ass. She said, what you need to do is rethink it. She said, what I started doing is I would ask him to come out to do hard work one time. The next time, every other time, I asked him to come out to the barn, it was for something fun. It was for something light that didn't involve a lot of hard work. It was taking pictures or, you know, just something minor. So that every time he came out to the barn, his conditioning wasn't that, oh, God, I'm going to the barn again, I'm going to kill myself. So I thought that was an excellent point.
Yeah, you know, and actually it's not so off topic as you think. Those same principles apply to our horses even. You know, so sometimes I get on and go, okay, everything's not going to be some hour workout that's hard and we're constantly, sometimes I get on and go, we're just going to do a little 10-minute thing. You know, so they don't always know what's going to happen and what's going on. So not so off topic really, but it's a good point. It's a great point because those are effective. You know, that is really a super training tool all the way around.
Here we are, helping with your marriage life and your horse life.
And you can find your kids too. So there you go.
Thank you, Shauna, for being on. We really appreciate you joining us here every month. Give us your website out.
You can go to shaunacarish.com. That's a little longer to spell. AskShauna.com also takes you to the same. You'll get right to the website, and that will take you all around, and you can navigate and find more information. There's a blog there, lots of videos, which help, too, to kind of walk people through some things.
All right, great. So that's AskShauna.com. We appreciate you being on, and thank you, Coach Jen, for jumping in and helping out with the training segments. She just knows so much more than Jamie and I. So,
you guys
were talking about training horses. Here I was thinking about us horse husbands. So that tells you something. Thanks, Shauna.
Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jennifer. Definitely Jennifer is the one to, the go-to clicker training person, for sure. Because I still don't get it. You need to clicker train me to start to understand clicker training.
We'll send Chad a clicker. We'll send him a clicker, and we'll send him a target. The target is going to be an empty whiskey bottle with a little red ball on the top of it. That's going to be the target.
I don't even get that joke.
Hey, why don't you introduce our song today? Because I know that I know that you like this guy.
Yeah, watch your mouth now. My mama get mad at you. I know my mama get mad at you. I did not fall in love with this guy. I just really like him and his music. This could be she's listening today. She'll get
sorry,
mad.
Sorry, Mom. It was a Freudian slip. We were just talking about all that other stuff, and I wasn't
thinking. Apparently, last time I had to go, Glenn started talking about me liking this boy and this musician, saying I had a crush on him and stuff like that. And he was saying it behind my back. Well, my mama was listening to the show, and she called me after the show, and she's like, you better talk to Glenn because he was acting like you really like this guy. And, your husband, if he heard that, he would get really upset. Well, first of all, my husband would not get upset. Second of all, thanks, Mom. You got my back, woman. I love it. All right, so long story short, Jared Rogerson, he is a cutie. He is a cowboy. He is a phenomenal artist, and he is going to be huge someday. We're going to say, remember when Jared was on our show? Wasn't that awesome? We knew him before. We knew him before he was famous. Well, this is Jared Rogerson, and we got to do a show with him that we're going to air Monday. It's going to be a special musical episode, and you don't want to miss it. It's just great music, and it's great music horse style, cowboy style. But just listen to his voice. Listen to this song. This is called Ride My Horse More, and make sure you tune in on Monday to hear the entire musical episode with Jared Rogerson.
It is smoke in the air, you can't see it from anywhere. There's a million people driving around, going nowhere. Buildings grew up all around me, but I still got a painted pony. Gonna give her a job, 'cause she's fat and bored. And I'm gonna ride my horse more. Well, I love to drive my truck. The open road feels pretty good. But just because you can doesn't mean that you always should. And I can hardly breathe. Man, this is killing me. I'm gonna ride my horse more. Mother Nature, she's been beat up, and I'd say she's been abused. Now even the ocean's black and blue. Gasoline just turns to haze, and my wallet's on empty anyway. Holding the reins is something I can afford, so I'm gonna ride my horse more. Well, I love to drive my truck. The open road feels pretty good. But just because you can doesn't mean that you always should. And I can hardly breathe. Man, this is killing me. I'm gonna ride
I don't care who you are. That's just good. That is just good. That's Jared Rogerson, Ride My Horse More. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Back on Track. Now, Glenn, were you paying attention to the words in that song? Because it's not really about riding his horse more because he's not getting out there enough because he's being a slacker like some of us. Oh, it's not perfect weather. I'm not going to go ride. No, he's riding because it's his therapy. Because there's other stuff that's really bugging him, and it's usually involving a woman. His songs are like, horses are the best part of his day, and the women are crazy. That's what I liked about it.
I couldn't argue with
him. You make that
either.
About yourself. Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Show will be on Monday next week. We'll have him on. And he was a fascinating guy. You know, he's a rodeo guy. And,
he's also got a master's degree.
I know.
Right?
He was the smartest guest we've ever had on the show for a musical episode, for certain. He was just interesting guy.
Amazing, yeah. So it was really good. And, yes, I did have to go there, and I did have to ask him. I said, all of our lady listeners would like to know, are you single? Because he's cute, too. And I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen Monday to
find out on Monday.
Jared Rogerson is single. Okay.
Today's Horse Radio Network show highlight is the driving radio show. This week's is out, episode number 10, Fall Driving in Kentucky and Acupuncture. And we had a big announcement on that show you're going to want to hear about, and we'll be talking a little bit more about it here on this show in a couple of weeks. Plus, we chat with Leslie Hernandez about Spokes and Spurs, which is a carriage driving club here in Kentucky, which I'm going to join, and the second annual Hermitage Classic. That's a big CDE that she has over there in Louisville. And Dr. Ying talked to us, Wendy talked to us all about acupuncture. She was trying to convince me, that I should get acupuncture, and not doing that yet, not signing up. Did you know, this is amazing, that to do acupuncture on a horse, you have to be a veterinarian.
Correct.
To do acupuncture on a human, you just have to go to a class. You don't even have to be a doctor or nothing. You just have to take some classes. Yes. You have to take some classes to be certified to do acupuncture on a human, but that's it. You don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be anything. You don't even have to have a college degree.
Is it an extended class or anything, or is it just like a day one, here you go, here's your needles?
I don't know, but it was driving me crazy just listening to that going, wow, I didn't know that, you know? It's like, and I'm going to go to one of these people. And she tells a funny story a couple episodes ago. She said, Wendy, she's kind of funny. When I first started learning acupuncture, I came home to my boyfriend, and I said, you know, I need to practice this. And we were practicing around the horse's hooves. But I need to practice on you, and you don't have hooves, so how about if I do your fingernails? And she was actually sticking needles around his fingernails. And she said, I kept wondering why he was screaming so much.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah, everybody tune into that show. Geez, you really sold it, Glenn.
That's funny, though. Hey, we have Christy on the line here.
Yes, we do. And Christy and Dr. Jones, I got to tell you what I talked about before you guys were on, just so you don't think I'm talking behind your back. When you do things like sheath cleaning and stuff and abscesses, I find that fascinating. And I love it. And I think it's great. And Glenn hates every living second of it because he gets totally grossed out. Now, here's what today's show is going to do to me and Glenn. First of all, Glenn, as usual, will get grossed out. And the other thing that's going to happen to me is I'm going to become paranoid. That's what you're doing to me right now.
We take our work very seriously.
I think today's show deserves this.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and Christy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
I'd like to say so long to everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. I have an appointment to get to. I'll think of something here in the next 2 minutes. All right,
gotta go see a man about a horse.
Yeah,
exactly. If I can't ruin your lunch with a discussion of flesh-eating bacteria, you know, I just need to quit.
You're right.
I think you can do it. I'm for both of you guys. So here's what we have to do. Let me just introduce. Obviously, Aaron is from. I'm sorry. Christy is from thehorse.com, and Aaron, Dr. Jones, is with us. And you guys also have another guest. So Christy, why don't you go ahead and introduce her?
We do. We have Dr. Amanda House from the University of Florida joining us today to talk a little bit about MRSA. Thanks, Dr. House, for showing up. Not that Dr. House, different Dr. House.
I was going to say it's so appropriate.
I know, right? Thank you, Amanda, for joining us.
I hear that
today.
Quite a bit. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so Dr. House, are you actually the House version? Do you get all the cases that nobody wants and nobody can figure out, and you're all mean and grumpy and you figure it out? Is that you?
Well, I'm happy to tell you that I'm generally not mean and grumpy,
okay,
I'm not addicted to any narcotics, nor do I have a limp at this point in time.
Okay.
So I think that's probably all positive. I am a large animal internist, so internal medicine is my specialty, which is the same specialty as Dr. House on TV. So there are a few similarities.
And I do hear that she keeps a cane in the corner of her office just in case anybody gets froggy.
I thought that was to beat the horses with, to beat them into submission.
Not the horses,
you can get away
but
with that easier
sometimes
than
the students.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about MRSA today. We just had a report on thehorse.com of what is actually just the third reported case of horse-to-human transmission of MRSA. A Dutch girl who caught it from her Friesian foal. And it's one of those topics that it doesn't tend to come up a whole lot, but whenever it does, it tends to scare the pants off of people. So we thought we'd talk about it a little bit. Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about exactly what MRSA is?
Sure. MRSA means methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And Staph aureus is actually a pretty common bacteria that colonizes the nasal passages of about 30% of people and about 7% of horses. And the fact that it colonizes them actually does not typically make them sick. Typically, there's no signs associated with colonization. However, this bacteria can have a specific gene that results in it being resistant to a large number of antibiotics, so beta-lactam and methicillin-type antimicrobials. And so when it has that gene, then we call it methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And infections with MRSA have been pretty commonly associated with people in hospitals, but there are an increasing number of reports of this bacteria in the community as well, actually, and causing skin infections and other types of infections in people who have not been hospitalized.
Is it the same as you always hear about people, you just mentioned hospitals, sorry to interrupt you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same thing as a staph infection? You hear people in hospitals getting a staph infection.
Yes, it's the same bacteria, but MRSA, or the methicillin-resistant type staph infection, tends to be resistant to a large number of antimicrobials. And the only way to really know that is actually to do a culture of the infection, to do a culture and a sensitivity so that we can see what antibiotics it is actually resistant to. Interestingly enough, this bacteria colonizes, in different studies, up to 3.5% of normal people and up to about 5% of normal horses. So it is out there in the community, in the environment, and isn't causing sickness in everybody.
And Christy, I'm going to post into here what Dr. House is saying, basically, and add to it as a general practitioner in the field. There's a lot of times, especially in the recession now that's going on, that clients are declining or hesitant to do cultures on simple wounds or a respiratory infection because of finances and the economics of it. But I think she's bringing up a very good point that you really have to do the culture and sensitivity to get a good idea of what kind of bug you're dealing with so that you can pick the appropriate antibiotic. And, you know, if they don't think about it, they could run through different types of antibiotics without a culture and almost run their bill up to twice as much as what a culture would have cost them in the initial onset.
For sure.
That's
and
a really good point.
And all the while, the bacterium is just going nuts and doing more and more and more damage as well, while it's not controlled, right?
Yeah.
So this case that we actually reported this week with the Dutch girl, that particular strain of MRSA that she had was found to be resistant to 6 different kinds of antibiotics. So that can be a lot of treatment time while you're going through all those. So just something to keep in mind. All right, so another thing that's interesting about MRSA that we've reported as well, and actually another report just from about a month ago that we had on thehorse.com, equine veterinarians are more likely to contract MRSA and to carry MRSA than the general population, which I've found interesting for the last couple of years that they've been talking about it at the veterinary conventions. Amanda, could you tell us a little bit about those numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. There's been a couple of different published reports from a couple of different veterinary conventions, and the rates they found ranged from about 10% of equine veterinarians who were tested carried the bacteria up to about 15.5% of large animal veterinarians and personnel carrying the bacteria. The majority of the isolates in one of the studies that they found were consistent with the type that most horses carry within their nasal passages. The other thing that was really interesting that they found was that hand washing between cases, between looking at different equine patients and in between farms, was actually considered protective for the veterinarians who were not positive. So that means if you had really good hand washing and sanitation procedures and used an alcohol-based hand sanitizer and some soap and water in between your patients, you are actually less likely, if you were an equine vet, to be positive for this bacteria.
Which leads
now,
right into...
Christy, many veterinarians, how many vets do you guys think do that? Do just that, wash their hands either before and after every call?
Dr. Jones is laughing.
Yes.
It adds flavor when you eat your lunch if you don't. Come on.
That's my point exactly. Dr. Jones' laugh summed that question up for me.
Well, you know, obviously some of them do it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had the group in the study. They wouldn't have been able to tell if it helped. So obviously some of them do.
I'll tell you, when I'm dealing with the nasal passage of a horse, I definitely do, because that's gross snot. Mm-hmm. And there is intranasal vaccines that are given that I feel it's necessary to wash or wear gloves between each one. Not the same gloves, but dispose of those gloves and put on new gloves or wash your hands in between. So ironically, I do carry the alcohol in my pocket type one, or I'll wash up if it's just a couple horses and between each one that I'm doing an intranasal vaccine on.
Very good. And I wanted to bring up, too, that the hand washing, that there's a technique for the hand washing, and it isn't just like run your hands under some water and wipe off the obvious stuff. What's the recommendation, Erin? Sing happy birthday twice while you're washing your hands with soap and water?
Yes, definitely doing that. The alcohol sanitizers, I think they dry up before that actually, you know, expires. But I feel like I'm at least getting majority of the stuff off when I do that in between. When we do like a large herd and I'm doing one right after the other, I just put the pump thing in my pocket and rinse off between the intranasal vaccines.
And Dr. Jones brings up a great point, because in a lot of the studies that have been done in human medicine and by the CDC, you know, they haven't found a significant, a major difference in between good use of soap and water versus an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. But in human medicine, typically their hands aren't getting maybe as visibly dirty as ours are getting when we're working on the in the field or with horses or, you know, in a farm type environment. So I think, you know, even using both, or, you know, making sure that your hands are pretty relatively clean looking before you use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer is probably a good policy as well.
Sure, and that's the concept with almost any disinfectant, is that they don't work that well in the presence of organic material. That'd be the dirt that's all over your hands.
That's exactly right.
So, all right. So if someone does end up, despite all precautions to the contrary, if somebody does end up with a MRSA infection, you mentioned a little bit about culture and sensitivity results in the lab, but how do you kill it if it's resistant to so many things? What kind of treatment's usually involved?
Well, we certainly would recommend that somebody speak with their medical practitioner about this. If we're talking about the disease in horses, we are going to recommend a culture and sensitivity to see what antibiotics it is. Hopefully, there will usually be a couple that it is sensitive to. And then we're often placing the horse on a long course of antibiotics. And sometimes there's actually some topical treatments that we can do as well that will kill the bacteria. And in fact, in human medicine, they have used some topical ointments that have done a good job in killing the infection in some people that have it.
And I agree with Dr. House there. I've actually cultured it out of numerous wounds in horses, and the topical topical treatments seem to be the better choice at the time. So I explained to the clients, just like you would have a wound on your hand or your arm, you know, just a scrape on the knees of your kids, you're not going to let that continue to stay dirty. You're going to keep it clean and put antibiotic on it. Same thing with the horse. They're just like two-year-old kids. They're going to get out there and get dirty. Keep it clean and put some topical on, and it will work very, very well.
I got to tell you, I had a friend who a couple years ago got a staph infection from being in the hospital, and he had it in the middle of his back. And it was fairly large, and that was a nightmare. He was in pain, and he couldn't reach it. So he constantly, and he lived alone, he constantly had to have the nurses coming over because he could not get to it, and they were doing topical and antibiotics. It took probably a year before it was totally gone. It's nasty stuff.
Yeah,
it is. Terrible. They can be really difficult to get rid of, even with appropriate therapy. Sometimes we are talking about months of treatment.
This girl in the story that I mentioned earlier, it said that hers resolved after 3 months of treatment with three different antibiotics, as well as chlorhexidine shampoo baths 3 times a day. So wash those hands.
Now, Dr. Jones and Dr. House, you know, people used to die from this on a fairly regular basis in animals, too. Is it are deaths common anymore with this, or most of the time can it be treated?
Go ahead, Dr. House. I'd say most of the time being treated, they've been fine. But go ahead, Dr. House. You probably
And I would agree. And actually, this surprised me, but there was a study published in 2009 looking at this disease in horses, because it can manifest in a lot of different ways. And it actually found that over 80% of the horses that had the infection subsequently survived and did well. And so I think it is treatable, but it can certainly be a longer course of treatment. It may be expensive to treat if the horse or the person requires prolonged hospitalization to get it treated as well.
Now, I know one of the things, too, with this guy, with my friend, is that it got treated, and then he had it come back in a different spot. Is that common? Does it come back?
I've not seen it in horses. Have you, Dr. House?
It I've seen one horse that probably just never had it completely go away. That was treated for a long time. It was an infection in the leg, and it continued to be an issue. It did not come back in a different location. And I think that that depends a little bit on the case. I unfortunately had a case several years ago that got an infection at its catheter site, and the horse subsequently, the bacteria got into the bloodstream and then infected the horse's lungs, and the horse had horrible, horrible pneumonia with abscesses all over the lung fields as a result of this infection. And that case, unfortunately, did not turn out the way that 80% of them do. That case did not survive from the infection. It was very, very sick. So I think it depends on the severity. The skin infections, the leg infections, I think a lot of the superficial infections can respond to treatment and do well. This is not a bacteria, though, that you really want to get into your bloodstream and into any of your major organs.
No, I'm not signing up for that one.
No, I wouldn't either.
Christy, this is the point where you say, we're running out of time, but we have some great videos of this on thehorse.com.
You know, we actually do have a video of this.
How did I know?
But it's actually an interview, so it's not too scary.
Okay. No, you're
lucky
supposed
for
to come
you,
on
Glenn.
And say, Glenn, we have a great one that shows the whole half of the horse's skin had fallen off. This is the point where you do that one.
I will work on that for you.
Okay.
I will work on that because I know that you are just dying to have it.
I know.
And I know you want to see exactly what all the nasty things that this can look like.
Did
so,
this poor little girl survive,
up.
Right? She survived.
Yes. Yes, she did. Okay. She did. So it all worked out. Okay. Okay. So, Glenn, we're running out of time. But no, it's seriously. I'm going to put up a few links to some of these articles on thehorse.com and to the video just for you, Glenn. But thank you very much for having us on the show today. Really, it's like I said, it's not something that's really, really common as far as people getting infected from their horses. Obviously, that's just the third reported case, but people do ask about it. It does rightfully scare the pants off of people sometimes. So I'm glad we had the chance to come and talk about this. So thank you.
Yeah. And it's interesting to hear you guys all talk about it. And we got to have Dr. House on the show.
I know.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
And after this interview, she's now walking with a limp.
Not at all.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely
hey,
not.
I want to remind everybody, too, that Jennifer takes and puts these Wednesday segments over on Horse Tip Daily. So if you want to go back and reference one and don't want to dig through the Horses in the Morning show, just go to Horse Tip Daily and you can find all of the horse.com segments there. She cuts out the gory parts and just puts those over there. So,
I don't believe that for a minute.
It'd be very empty if she cut it out.
That's true.
I'd be very disappointed.
Hey, we're on vacation next week, so we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks.
All right, fair enough.
All
right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. House.
Bye.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Not
as gross as I was hoping for, and they pretty much let me know that it was rare, so I don't have to be paranoid. I love these segments. I just love listening to doctors talk and talking about stuff and educating us. I just think it's such a great segment, and hopefully
we can have Dr. House back. She was terrific.
Yeah, she's really good. I was impressed.
And besides, every time they said Dr. House, I just thought of him walking around with his cane, taking his drugs.
Isn't that funny?
Do you watch it anymore?
I watch it sometimes if it's on and nothing else is on, but usually during the day when it's, on Lifetime or whatever.
Reruns. Yeah, I used to watch it, but then I started getting like you. I started getting paranoid. It was like, okay, I can't watch this anymore. I was starting to get everything they had. So.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you had all the very odd diseases.
Well, this is That's coming funny. From a guy though who was pretty sick for a long time, so I'm kind of paranoid about all that anyway. And then to have that, it's like. But my friend that had this, he had a tough time for about 2 years. I mean, it was a tough time with this, and it was not. He was in pain, serious pain. It's not a fun.
Yeah, disease. I went to high school with a guy who had knee surgery, heard it playing football, and got the staph infection in the surgery site. And, I mean, he was out for almost the entire year. He didn't go to school simply because it's such a it's so bad. It is so bad. So on a happier note, anything exciting to talk about before we wrap this show up?
There's a new video game, you said.
Yes, I was going to tell you that there's a video game, and it's for Xbox, PS3, and Wii. So you can pretty much
find it.
Oh, we
can get one then.
Yeah, I've got a Wii too, except for the dog chewed up the receptors, and Yada destroyed the controllers. So I'm going to get new controllers. And then I can play the new video game, Champion Jockey. This is awesome. You can be a jockey, and it's on Wii. So, I mean, you've got your little controller in your right hand, your left hand, and you're like, riding. It's called Champion Jockey. It was released on September 2nd, and it's not just flat racing. You can do jump racing, too. So steeplechasing and flat racing, it's all grade one races. So, obviously, you can make some money. Or not. You don't have to have very much riding experience. And the game costs £39. So I asked Chad to translate that, and he said that's like $70. But I don't believe him, because no video games are $70, are they?
Well, yeah, $60, $70 is what video games cost, actually.
Well, then I believe him. But yeah, this is cool. You use the reins and the whip, and you shift your body to try to get around the turns and everything. I want to play this. I think it's very cool. So
is it available
again,
here yet? Do you know?
If you can go to championjockey.eu. I guess it's in Europe, you know, obviously. Duh. And then I'm looking at the website right now, Champion Jockey. It's called Grade 1 Jockey and Gallop Racer. You can be a gallop racer on the website.
We have to try this one, Jennifer. That's the closest we're ever going to get to riding a horse that fast. Or want to.
I don't know if it's in the U.S. I mean, obviously, it's on PS3, Xbox, Kinect, Wii, PlayStation. It's on everyone wants.
Yeah, if anybody knows whether it's available here, let us know. But that sounds like fun. It'll remind you of your old days when you were doing when you were training the horses in the mornings at Keeneland. I'll bring back memories.
Yeah, so it would remind me of the fact that I was like, whoa, ah! Yeah, that would take me right back to those fun days.
Stop bucking.
No, please don't buck me off. Please don't buck me off.
Hey, before we wrap up here today, I don't want to forget this. The question of the day got a lot of comments, and the question was, so what's your pet peeve, dumb things that people do to save money when it comes to your horse? And there were 14 comments on there. I really didn't see anything that we didn't cover too much, except for saddles. Don't buy a cheap saddle.
Yeah, saddle
kit. Yeah, and that was the one I think that I saw that wasn't one that we had covered, but most of them were things that we had covered. But thank you, everybody, for commenting and posting on that. We really appreciate people participating in our questions of the day. We want to thank all of our guests today, all the doctors and Christy for being on, and Shauna and Jennifer for doing that segment. We appreciate that, too. Also wanted to mention, I posted a video, and if you haven't watched it yet, Jamie, watch it. It's on our Horses in the Morning page on Facebook. It's Biker Rescued from a Burning Wreck. And it's an incredible video in Utah. This biker ran into the front of a car, and he ended up underneath the car, and they couldn't get him out from underneath the car. So bystanders, about 15 bystanders, went up and within seconds organized and lifted the car up off the guy, this 3,000-pound car, lifted it up off the guy and dragged the guy out from underneath the car, and he lived.
Oh, my gosh.
The motorcycle was on fire. The car was catching on fire, and they had to do this right now. They were within 2 feet of the flames, and they just did it. It was just one of those things. I said to Jennifer, only in Utah. But they just got in and did it. So I put the title, an amazing video of some ordinary people doing an extraordinary thing, and that's exactly what it was. So you have to watch that video.
Okay, definitely have to check that out.
Yeah. That's all I've got. That's it. Day's over. We can quit.
You're one day closer to vacation, Glenn. So
Yay!
Everybody, please have a wonderful day. And remember to spay, neuter, and geld.
We'll see you, peelers, everybody.